Hello everyone, welcome to the Local Shop Podcast. I'm Chris Noyce. This is the podcast for everything to do with the convenience sector and the issues facing local shops. Now, you might be listening to this on your way up to our technology showcase or in the lead up to the technology showcase on the 5th of February. And that's what we're talking about today. We're talking about tech. Looking forward to a really great event where we're going to have some top tier speakers at the event. So I'm chairing the first session with speakers from Google, speakers from True Global and from social media experts, maybe. And that's going to be a great session. I look forward to seeing lots of you there. But also we've got the showcase aspect of the event as well, where there are a number of companies that have been shortlisted to present to retailers almost in a Dragon's Den style presentation. So those are HL Display, who do sort of zero waste, plastic-free packaging, that kind of thing. APG Cash Draw, which is an intelligent cash drawer, counting cash, real-time data, that kind of thing. ePay, Near Street, Snappy Shopper and ICOS all presenting on the day. So really looking forward to that, and hopefully there'll be some new things for retailers to take back in their stores. Now, on to today's episode, I'm delighted to have Katie Cross from ACS. That was the easy booking. Welcome to the podcast, Katie.
Hi.
And we've got Georgie Altman from Google as well, who is joining us to talk about technology. So welcome to the podcast.
Hi.
Georgie. The first thing that I want to get into, and this is one of the questions that we get from retailers a lot of the time, is retailers just say to us, there is so much out there in terms of data, in terms of information about my shoppers, about the business, all that sort of thing, that I don't even know where to start. Are you seeing this as a problem for businesses that are just overwhelmed by what's out there?
We hear that a lot from businesses that from all different categories. I think it's a kind of truism for everybody. And I think when it comes to grocery, where so much activity is happening, obviously in store, mm-hmm. But then there's sort of nascent behaviours emerging online. There's another question of how to integrate that, what to capture, what to listen to. So yes, I think this is a big challenge, and I think, especially in the grocery and convenience sector, it's that question around how to get channels speaking to each other. So how to take insight that might be emerging online and make it useful for what behaviours are going to end up happening in store and vice versa. And that's a really difficult challenge. So yes, we see that. We see those questions coming up all the time.
Yeah. And Casey, that tends to reflect in some of our data on what retailers use. So we're still not seeing huge adoption of even things, simple things like EPOS in stores.
Yeah, absolutely. So from our local shop report, we know that retailers are investing in tech in a whole range of different technologies, but it is still relatively low in some cases. So for example, almost 40% of retailers have a website, but that's still very low, and that's quite a low online presence there. We saw increases over the last few years in the percentage that have a social media account. So they have Facebook and Twitter.
And that kind of thing is astonishing, isn't it? Because it's free. It's not that difficult to do. It's, in many cases, is replacing a lot of the marketing spend by just retailers talking to their communities. And for retailers not to be on social media should be really the exception rather than the rule these days, I would have thought.
Yeah, absolutely. It's extremely important for retailers to be visible within their communities and outside of their communities, which I'm sure you've got quite a lot of information on as well.
Katie and I went to a Google event a few weeks ago. Was it before Christmas?
It was
pre-Christmas.
It's an awfully long time ago.
Right, okay.
I know, it's gone quickly.
Pre-Christmas, 2019,
yes. Right,
the last decade we went to a Google event. Hopefully it's still relevant, being from the last decade. And that was about lots of different things, but one was how businesses can be more visible outside of their local communities. And some of that stuff is really, really interesting.
Yeah, it was a really interesting project for us. And just as a bit of context on it, the entire focus was around top-up missions, convenience, I guess, in another guise. And the question, the reason we were focused there was because our clients told us that was what was particularly interesting to them, and there was a kind of grey area on insight. And the key question that they had was, what behaviours are emerging online from a consumer perspective on these types of missions? are their behaviours and how can we affect those behaviours so that what they then go on to do in store, you know, we've somehow kind of contributed to.
Yeah.
In the journey. And so that was a kind of a key question they pushed back onto us, and rightly so. I think there's a kind of question mark over how much grocery retailers want to be investing purely in driving traffic to their e-com sites for kind of various reasons. And stores is obviously the big concern. So that was why we did that project. And yeah. It just threw up a whole level of really interesting insights. And it also it led us to ask different questions of our data and to look very much at online intent to store in the grocery sector. So what I mean by that is when consumers are doing searches for grocery stores,
yeah,
what does that look like?
A peak, was it in the evening? Was there a reasonable peak in for the smaller stores? It was sort of 7-8 in the evening?
Yeah, right. So exactly. We did with our data science team a really big piece of analysis looking specifically at searches to grocery stores, and what that meant was we could kind of create maps of demand effectively around those stores and try to understand what does demand for stores look like inside of search, and can we kind of draw out some interesting relationships or trends that can help us and help our partners. And one of the things we were able to do at a very macro level was look at things like how does demand peak and trough. And so we saw really interesting things, for example, like this is very, very general, so this is kind of format agnostic, but the working week and a Saturday behave similarly in terms of how demand builds across the day. It's quite consistent. Yeah. Saturday peaks a bit later than the working week. But Sunday behaves completely differently, for example.
Okay.
There's a peak at 9 a.m. and another peak at 3 p.m. of kind of demand in search for stores.
Sure.
So we could see at a very macro level things like that. Obviously, there's huge potential to drill right down into that when you get into different brands and areas,
and
formats and things like that.
And how much did that correlate with the busy times that stores see as part of their sort of profile on the sort of Google My Business page, where so a lot of retailers said to us that having Google My Business and having that thing of when they're open and when it's busy and that kind of things is invaluable to them. It's really important. Is there a correlation between search and just generally when the stores are busy?
It's a really good question. It's actually not a piece of analysis we've done. We're sort of at the stage now where we're working individually with our partners, so different brands, and we'll get into probably that level of data with either them sharing with us stuff like footfall data or us looking at our own data out of Google My Business. Although to be fair, a lot of that is driven out of intent, like from search queries and things like that. So it kind of borrows from those types of behaviours online. So there will be a massive correlation from our platform because it's sharing the same points of interest effectively.
One of the things that we see a lot of is retailers that are getting a bit better at understanding the customers when they're in the store, but they don't necessarily understand what they're doing instead of being in the store.
Do you mean in the lead up to and before they go to store or in
both? So this is why I asked about the search versus the busy time, because it might be that lots of people are searching for a convenience store near me, and then they're not quite happy with the independent stores, for example, that are near them, and then that most convenient store to them could be a forecourt, could be a supermarket, and then they go there instead.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a conversion thing, right? It's how many people are finding smaller stores when they're looking for them, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way that we approached the analysis was trying to understand when demand exists for stores on our platforms, what does it look like, I guess? So how does it behave around those stores? How big are the catchments? And what sorts of other behaviours can we see? And I guess we can't really speak to kind of what else is going on. I think search is an amazing repository, but it's imperfect. We can only kind of interpret what exists there, which is a proportion, you know, of behaviour. So we have to bear that in mind. But I think one of the things that's particularly interesting that we saw, so we did third party research, and we saw one of the key issues for consumers is this, on convenience missions, is this thing around risk. So for them, they kept saying, you know, if I'm going for five items and three end up not being there or not being the price I expected or I had to substitute, you know, for a different type of product, where it was, that's quite disappointing, because, you know, that's a large proportion of the reason I was there in the first place. It feels like a wasted trip. On my main shop, that's not the case, because I expect to substitute quite a lot of items and just get them all in one go. And then to account for that risk, they feel like they should be able to control for the outcome more, and often digital is a means of doing that.
Yeah.
So the other thing that we see in search, we see consumers searching more and more every year for specific stores. So that behaviour is definitely growing. So that's a brand and a location. So like a town it might be, or even like a street, like if that's the name of their local store. So that behaviour is growing, but also this thing we call modifiers, which isn't, it's not very easy to understand, but it's if I'm searching for a brand or a grocery brand or whatever it is, a convenience store, I'll add something into that search to help me get a bit more specific with the answer. So we're seeing that grow specifically around terms around convenience, like opening times and directions and things like that, but also fresh food, deals, alcohol. So it might be, you know, grocery brand plus, you know, wine deals. And we're seeing that type of specific approach to searching growing. And I think it's this thing around controlling the outcome more so that by the time I get there, it doesn't matter necessarily as much where I went to, so long as I got what I wanted. It's that kind of mentality. We saw that coming through really strongly, which we thought was really interesting. This thing about becoming more specific and being able to control the outcome more.
Yeah. And Katie, this has got to be a challenge for stores that, like I said, not all of them got EPOS, and feeding in that information has got to be a real challenge, and just having the availability has got to be a challenge as well, because, you know, all this takes investment, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the questions we get from retailers quite often is, how do we know if a technology item is something that they have to be investing in because it's a long-term trend, and how do we know something that people are investing in and it's like a fad or a gimmick or something based around technology that's actually going to go away? I think around search, that's something that's definitely stuck. Like, everyone Googles things now when they want to find out things, and that's something I guess retailers can get on board with, because they know, okay, if people want to find somewhere and they don't know my store already, they might search it. But there are other things around technology. It's like, how do they know exactly what it is that they should be investing their money in?
Yeah, and it's interesting you say about long-term trends versus fads and things. We're seeing this at the moment in retailers' hesitance to put electric charging points in forecourts, because the tech is moving so fast and the batteries are moving very quickly in terms of what they're able to do. The retailers are just saying, actually, you know what, I'm just going to wait it out a bit, because I don't want to put something in, spend loads of money, and then a year, 18 months down the line, it's not useful anymore.
Yeah, and I think as well, some technology works really well for some stores and not for others. So you think self-service checkouts, for example, may work well in a bigger supermarket where they've got more space, but we're seeing take-up of self-serve checkouts in convenience stores still very, very low. It's still, I think, around
3%. Yeah.
And there are all kinds of reasons why people might not be investing in that, like I said, around the space, or perhaps around the crime element that can be tied in with that. But there's also this argument around, for smaller stores, should they be focusing on the technology side of things, or should they be focusing on their customers and... you know, it's a really personal store. They know the people within their communities. They like to have those conversations with people, and about balancing kind of the efficiency and the productivity of the store with the personal touch as well. So
yeah, it's really interesting. So I was speaking at a conference earlier this week, and there was a guy who was talking at the event who was saying, I divide my customers into two types. There's the customer that likes everything to be in the same place every time, doesn't like things to move shelves, doesn't like any big new adverts or product availability stuff or anything like that, or anything that interrupts the journey, and like self-serve tills, and just doesn't want to talk to anyone. And then there's the other kind of customer that absolutely wants to be interrupted in their journey. They want tastings of things in stores. They want to have a chat with someone behind the till. They want all that kind of thing. And I guess the second one of those is a lot easier to track from an independent point of view, because you're having that interaction. But when you've got people that are just flying in and flying out, I guess those are the people that are probably the ones that are most likely to say, okay, I would like a product at this location at this time, where near me has this. And at the moment, convenience and most grocery can't really deliver that, can it?
No, yeah, it's a really interesting point. It's how much of the decision making has been made out of store.
Yeah.
And how far have I been as a customer empowered to make those decisions before I get there?
Comes into what you said about risk as well.
Like, yeah.
Don't want to go there and not find it when it's a semi-emergency and your turkey's burning or whatever it is.
That isn't. No, it's an emergency. Like, people are very emotive about these sorts of things. And I think, it's this thing about, you know, we're not grocery customers. We're people who buy things from lots of places. And I think the reality, and we saw this really come through very, very strongly in the research that we did, was that we are being conditioned by other categories that at present are far better placed to empower us to kind of self-serve more and more, especially in a kind of convenience mindset. And I think that's changing how we then, the expectations we place onto other categories. And so we had consumers, without prompt telling us, well, I Argos can tell me exactly how many are in my local store and I can get it that afternoon. I can do the same with curries. Even Nike can tell me that, and that's massive and global. So why can't I know if the crisps I want are down the road? Like, this seems so bizarre.
Yeah.
And I mean, we here can all understand that poses very different challenges.
There
is a very, technically, that is a very difficult thing to do.
There's a lot of infrastructure that needs to go
absolutely
into stores.
But yet the mentality of consumers is what it is. And so in the research, we saw really interesting things happening all the time, really consistently, where consumers thought they were searching for a local store, whatever it was their local, convenience store down the road. And they would end up at some form of website via search and be on it and looking around. And either there was no stock there because that website didn't have stock, or they don't have an e-com offering. And that was very frustrating because they were confused about why they weren't being shown what they were looking for, and they were being shown recipes or whatever it was. Or they really thought that the stock and pricing they were being shown, which was a national e-commerce website of that grocery brand, was the local store.
Yeah.
So then they'd end up in the store and go, well, I'm so confused because that brand of brownies that I wanted, where it said it was 3 for 2, first of all, maybe it's not here, or actually it is here, but it's not 3 for 2. It's, this discount, and I'm just confused. And so the whole thing feels very disconnected and a bit confusing. And then consumers feel like they're slightly being cheated.
Yeah.
They're like, are you charging me more because it's convenience? And I think it's this thing about price is such an important factor, and it's easy to forget what a driver that is for everybody. And actually, just because it's a convenience mission where one of the key things is speed and efficiency, it doesn't mean that people aren't willing to put the time in to get the right price. And so we saw people spending a lot of time before they got to store doing price comparisons, trying to do all these workarounds. And these are price comparisons on staple goods like fruit and tea bags.
Right.
This wasn't high ticket items. So it was a really interesting behaviour to observe.
And that's I suppose generationally, that's now a quite a natural embedded behaviour, isn't it? It's we used to have a situation where you'd have products that were, I guess, like a known price, like 4 pints of milk or loaf of bread or whatever it is. And then products that you didn't really know how much it was, like a jar of mustard or something. But now, with everything just right in front of you on your phone, everything's a known price product, and you're probably getting deals and whatever being fed to you from elsewhere, wherever you are. So it was a real challenge.
Mm.
I think there are some retailers that are, we talked about social media earlier, that are bypassing this. So I had a personal journey to find an orange twirl a few months ago. This is this limited edition thing. Other chocolates are available, obviously. But there was a thing where there was sort of deliberate scarcity in the market.
Okay.
It's like trying to get a Nintendo Switch. There's just none of them around. And some shops had them, and those retailers were on social media going, I've got X boxes of this.
Mm.
Come and get them, blah, blah, blah. Whereas if you could just Google and say, orange twirl near me, and then just loads of dots popped up, be brilliant. But maybe we're a little bit too far away from that.
I mean, technically, we are quite far away from it, but I think that'd be quite sad, isn't it? The whole point was that you had to kind of go and find it. We just gave everyone the answer.
Well, it was. I mean, it was good when I did find it, but the first few days when I didn't, my wife was not happy with me. Because every time I left for work, I said, well, anything you want.
It was always the same.
Come back with an orange twirl.
And don't come back until you have the
Exactly, orange twirl. Yeah. So, you know, three nights sleeping in the car. And all.
But no, you're right. I mean, in from a practical point of view, yes, we are far away from that. I mean, to an extent, we have a product at Google, one of various products that tries to connect things like inventory and sort of physical experience to the kind of digital world. And one of those is called local inventory ads. And, you know, that's had a lot of uptake in other categories where inventory is a little more static than grocery and easier to kind of forecast out. But what that means is a retailer will feed in their inventory per store to us, and then when you are searching for whatever it is, say it was black trousers and you're out and about, it will let you know via the shopping feed what trousers are available, black trousers in your local proximity, which stores have them, are they in stock, yes, how close is it. And that's a very powerful tool because you have, you know, present intent and demand right there to capture. At a grocery level, it's much more challenging, obviously, with stuff like fresh produce. I mean, to supply a live feed of inventory is very, very challenging, and that is a barrier. But we have moved that forward with other grocers, and obviously larger grocers. But with something called the Local Feeds Partnership, which is a project to be able to even make those feeds available, part of those feeds, maybe around general merchandise first of all. So we've done that with Waitrose, has kind of been a pioneer doing that. A few others are coming or looking and working with us to make that possible, but Waitrose has seen some really impressive results where that is possible. So it is coming. It will probably change things. It will change expectations, I'm sure, eventually, as it becomes more commonplace. But yes, it's much slower than in other categories, for sure.
I think consumer expectations is core to all of this, isn't it? Is that people expect so much now, and there's a real challenge for our sector, especially, because the clue's in the name. We'd say we are convenient, but there are lots of business models that are trying to disrupt that. So you've got people like Deliveroo, Uber Eats, you've got HelloFresh, you've got all those kind of business models that are saying, actually, the most convenient thing for you is just to stay home and we'll just bring everything to you. I mean, convenience stores that are not embedded in their communities, How do you then have a point of difference? It's got to be tough, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's really tough. And I think what you talked about in terms of technology and making sure is about customer expectations, that part of that is around just the overall experience of the store. So in our local shop report as well, we asked retailers about things like digital advertising screens, which people are taking up more now, providing in-store Wi-Fi. So around 20% have Wi-Fi in store now. So couple that with some kind of coffee or a seating area, for example. Perhaps retailers are using technologies to create a place to stay as well.
Yeah.
So a bit more around experience. But also I think in terms of technology, one of the key things we hear from retailers as well is that it can improve the efficiency within the business. So, for example, using, I don't know, Google Sheets or something like that, or having better CCTV where you can monitor that wherever you are. Basically, technology is about making your life easier and making your customers' life easier as well. It's difficult to know exactly what technology to be investing in, but I think when your customers are coming in, you can free up your staff time as well, especially. Yeah. So either by reducing staff hours in the business or by using the time that staff might have used somewhere else on a monotonous task that is now much easier because of technology, they can use that time to engage more with the customers that do want to be in store, even though there are still those people that want to get in and out.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting you mentioned Google Sheets. So Richard Inglis, who has a Southern Co-op store near Southampton, he uses Google Sheets, and he was featured at the Local Shop Report launch in September. He's going to be at the Tech Showcase on Wednesday. He's one of our expert panelists, judging all the finalists that I talked about at the start. And he uses Google Sheets to just make his business so much more efficient in terms of doing all the ordering day by day and doing all the staff rotating, all that kind of thing. Are you seeing more of that exposure to Google and similar products to just make the businesses more efficient?
I guess, I mean, I sit in a different part of the business, I guess. So we don't have great visibility on the uptake of stuff like our enterprise products that as much. But it makes total sense to me to hear that. I mean, they are set up for efficiency purposes like that. So I think to your point about, especially if you're a small business and you don't have like a centralized function that is driving to make all of this stuff efficient or, you know, synchronized, then it does make sense. I know that these products are being taken up by small businesses everywhere. So
I think the key thing is that this kind of thing isn't complicated or expensive anymore.
No, it's not.
So easy to access all of this.
Yeah,
like software as a service. It's just. I mean, I've recently switched my to-do lists from a bit of paper to an app.
Oh, not in the Google.
Not
suite.
In the Google family.
I can recommend Tasks. It's transformative.
I'll say it. At Ed, who also works at ACS, his recommendation, I use Trello, which is just because I'm still quite new to using to-do lists online. Mm. It was quite simple, but that kind of thing's great. Mm. And I was hesitant. And I think retailers have that thing where it's like, why should I change because what I'm doing works now? Mm. Whereas actually...
And different technologies work differently for everyone, though. So I love a handwritten list. I don't think I can go online for that. But I do pay using contactless in stores and I do shop online.
And you buy your train tickets on your phone,
I do
don't
use
you?
My app,
and
I don't. So if there is something that is genuinely really going to save me time and is going to be, I don't know, saving paper or whatever it is with the train tickets, you don't lose bits of, that's kind of the main reason I did it. But there's like a genuine need that I had for that. Mm. Whereas the list, I'm like, no, I need my paper and pen. I need to write it down. But then a lot of people would love that's online. So I guess it's about trying to cater to those different needs and make sure that you're covering everyone.
Mm. There's a kind of bigger point, I guess, within that, which is to your point, we're all sort of becoming more efficient with technology in kind of in a lopsided way, depending on what matters most to us. But in some form or another, if we find it easy enough to use, we generally adopt it in parts of our life. And I think linking it back to this whole topic, I think that applies to our most habitual purchases, our most frequent purchases, which is buying food and staple items and things like that. If we can make that more efficient and it's easy enough to do and technology is not a hinder, it's a help, I think we'll generally see a migration moving toward that being possible. I think it's kind of part of that same, it's just the world we live in, I think when technology's available.
I get quite sentimental. So like I use a lot of tech, but then I'm sentimental to things that I can hold on to. Mm. So yes, you might want efficiency in getting those goods, but then you might spend a little bit more time in store speaking to the person behind the counter.
Sure. Yeah,
so it's kind of like holding on to the nice things where it can still be personal.
And that's, for our sector, that's mainly the point of difference, isn't it? Yeah. It's having that interaction, it's having that reason for going to the store. Because like we said before about all these delivery apps, you still need a reason to go to the store, and interacting with people is... a lot of the time, that's as good a reason as any.
Yeah.
On that question you had around the delivery services and the deliveries and Uber Eats of this world. I think what's interesting about that is that, I guess, thinking about the work that we did, I think one of the key insights that we saw coming out of that and out of our own data is that local might not mean local to people. So in terms of proximity, people's entire mentality around what does convenience mean to me and how can you deliver it to me has changed. And I think, again, back to the world that we're living in and the businesses that what they can facilitate in terms of ease and availability and all these things and how efficient the experience they make is, we're being conditioned by delivery, we're conditioned by Uber and all the rest of it. And so what we see is consumers pressing those expectations back onto brands and onto experiences that actually weren't kind of set up for it. So the way that we see consumers searching for stores, you know, they're searching for convenience when they're nowhere near the store a lot of the time. Like, yeah, the spread of demand is vast, and you just kind of get the sense that our expectations are just unbelievably high now.
It's always saying, if I can't get to you, how do you get to me?
Totally. I think it's like proximity doesn't necessarily matter, and I think that is a massive challenge for a smaller store. But there were some great insights that came out of the internal analysis we did. Something like 60% of all searches for grocery stores in Brighton come from outside of Brighton.
Okay, right.
What does that mean?
Yeah,
it's like, okay, is that because is it something to do with commuting? Is it because Brighton's a leisure destination? Is it people travelling to Brighton? Is it because people who live in Brighton might work in London and they're on their commute home or something like this? And so you can start to hypothesize. I mean, I don't know what the answer is, but it's like, okay, well, that makes absolutely no sense. That's really bizarre. Mm. And then again, this makes more sense, but if you look, like, we did these really nice, I don't know if you saw them when you came to our event, but we did these visualizations of what demand looks like across a map.
Yes.
Based on the volume of searches for stores.
Did some of them sort of follow the big rail routes?
Exactly, that's the one I was going to mention. So we did a piece of work, we looked at all the searches to the Waterloo Station, grocers within Waterloo Station, and you can see we visualised it on a map, and the density of colour across postcodes was the volume of searches for those stores, and you see it track right across the southwestern train line, and a lot of the volume is coming from the furthest point away. And so you go, this is a convenience behaviour, if you like there's intent for like a convenience mission, like, I'm going to get my dinner for tonight before I go home.
Yeah.
This person is miles away.
When I get to Waterloo in 7 hours,
that's
the moment. Totally. I'm going to need to eat. So.
But then it begs the question of, what is convenience to people? What does local mean? And how do you address that demand?
Yeah, because it's a challenge for retail as well. We always think, you know, what is your community? Who is your base of people? And I would talk about it with forecourts, because petrol stations, most people are driving to the stores, and then your community is stretched a bit because of commuter belts and that sort of thing. But it's not just forecourts. This is anyone that's, I guess, near a railway station, near bus stations, or that sort of thing. And that stretching of what the community looks like is... it's really interesting to see, and like you said, just how far it goes.
Mm. And also, but when you think about format, this isn't just a behaviour that exists with direction toward convenience or smaller formats. This is true of all formats. So, this isn't... we see people demonstrating this type of demand online for what we obviously assume are convenience missions on... hypermarkets and the bigger stores and the metros and things like that. But when we did the third-party research, we see a lot of people just completing their convenience missions in larger format stores.
Yeah.
If they can control for the outcome, it sort of didn't really matter to them. As long as they can get in and out quickly, because that's obviously, efficiency is so key. But if they can and they feel confident they're going to get what they wanted... it didn't seem to matter to them that it was again, it goes, well, if the format's not convenience and they're not nearby necessarily, and all these other things, there's a demand online, it's how do you interpret all of that? And this is a convenience mission.
Yeah,
it's a lot to consider. It's really complex.
It's funny because we have done some research recently about asking what's near you, and we've had a real nightmare defining that because it's so individual to people as what they think is near them.
Right.
So there'll be some stores that, we talk about stores that have perhaps more than five businesses near them, which we anticipate as being on the same parade, I guess, or on the same street. But some people will say, our biggest competitor is a big Tesco or a big Sainsbury's, and that's near me, but it's like half a mile away.
Yeah.
And they'll say, that's near me, that's the nearest thing to me. And defining that is just so difficult. It's one of the challenges that we'll have to look at.
Yeah, it is really interesting what people see as local, and I also think it does play into the convenience sector as well, because yes, people will search and come from outside, and yes, people will commute, but there are a body of people who are within your community who do know your store is there without searching for it necessarily, and they might, people do have an affiliation with local as well. That is still around, and that is still growing in some cases. As people shop more and more online for certain things, maybe they will shop local when they can. Maybe they will think that is better for the environment, which is a a key issue at the moment, and I think that's going to play well into convenience as well. If there are things that you can get where you know it's right next to your house, for example, is there a way of getting that much more locally to you than another way?
We're well placed on this. There are 46 odd thousand stores. We talked about Deliveroo and Uber Eats and all these kind of things, but when it comes to those and even things like Amazon delivery and that sort of stuff, we have this huge network that I don't really think any other sector has of stores in basically every postcode that are going to have to be a part of this in the future. Mm. Whether they are doing fulfillment themselves and you open up the roof and you get an army of drones going off down the street, or whether there's more things like Amazon lockers or people picking up or a van going around, all that sort of stuff has got to benefit our sector, I would imagine, and see it more as an opportunity than a threat. Talking about the future then, I guess closing thoughts, if you were to look at the way that people shop for convenience missions, I guess, in 5 or 10 years' time, do you think there's going to be a real shift in the way that people carry out that shopping mission by using the technology available to them?
I guess it's hard to say if it's going to be a stark shift or if it's a kind of gradual change, but I think it tends to be this relationship between technology and functionality changing and adoption, and then kind of expectation changing and the technology changing again. There's like an interrelationship between those things. So I think it definitely depends on what happens with, you know, even our product and how that evolves, what's available, what information is there, and other technologies that become available, and we don't know yet. So my guess is, with 5 years is a long time in the world of technology, my guess is this is a space that is changing and it's definitely being looked at by lots of different technology players. So my guess is yes. And I think, having done the work that we did, looking at our data, but also, you know, with consumers outside of our world, There is a growing need there, and I think it's that shift around, and whether or not this is, you know, fundamentally, you know, positive or it's just a change, but we expect to be able to control or manage the potential for disappointment. We'd expect to be able to kind of be empowered enough so that we get what we want. And I think people see that that's possible everywhere else and not yet so much with their grocery shopping, and it's coming. And I think people's behaviour will shift when it can. So, I expect there will be.
Yeah. And to your point about 5 years being a long time in technology and in customer expectation, as you've seen, Katie, doing the Local Shop Report for a few years now, 5 years in convenience probably actually isn't that much of a long time, is it?
Yeah, every year I think, oh, this year is going to be the year that we're going to have a huge uptake in convenience retailers offering self-serve checkouts or whatever it might be, and then it doesn't necessarily come. And it's a really difficult question to ask about where we'll be in 5 to 10 years' time. I think you're totally right. It's about bigger societal changes, what society is doing overall. You know, one of the reasons we've moved to little shopping more little and often is because the way we work is changing. More women are in work, we're using more flexible working arrangements. Those are big societal shifts that have then pushed the technology into that direction. But I think what you're saying about how convenience stores might still be slightly behind in some of these things is really interesting, because we are still around and we are still doing really well for our customers and are still meeting those expectations without necessarily implementing those big technology items, or but then still trying to make our businesses more efficient using Google Sheets or things that are cheap and yet enhancing our businesses in small ways, I think, is really helping retailers. So, yeah, really interesting one. I don't know where it'll be in 5 years' time.
I think the final thing for me is it sort of loops back to where we started about visibility. The convenience stores have always enjoyed this prime spot in people's shopping habits because they're so local. And that visibility is almost a given. But if you're not going outside anymore, if the visibility of local businesses and what is available to you is what's available on Google, then you're sort of fighting a different battle. And that'll be really interesting to see how that plays out in the next few years, especially if we're talking about things like product availability in real time and all that kind of thing. Really interesting. So, but at the same time, for retailers that are willing to move a bit quicker and take a few more risks and know, push on with this stuff, then it's a massive opportunity. Really, really big opportunity. Great. Well, I think we'll curtail it there. We had only planned to talk for 20 minutes or so, and we've gone way above that. So for everyone still listening, thank you for joining us. Really appreciate Georgie coming to talk to us, and Katie. You'll see some or all of us at the Tech Showcase on Wednesday, where we'll be talking about, I'm sure, this and all other things affecting technology in the convenience sector. And I do need to finish by just highlighting once again the big campaign that we're running this year on Dementia Friends. We are intending to get 25,000 people trained as Dementia Friends in the convenience sector this year. If you'd like to know more about getting your staff trained up or getting yourself trained up, it takes less than 10 minutes. It's really easy to do. If you just go to acs25.org.uk, all the information is there, and we'll get you on the list, and you can start helping customers more that are living with dementia in store. Until then, thank you again for listening, and all the information, as always, about everything that we're doing at ACS is available on our website at acs.org.uk.